From the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, the rapper Nipsey Hussle was fatally shot on Sunday. We'll examine his legacy both as an artist and as a community activist. And there's a new group show of Western artists and a massive outdoor art installation in Palm Springs in the Coachella Valley. We'll take a tour of Desert X.
I think you can go out to the desert, drive from Los Angeles, and you may bring with you some of that same energy that goes along with our kind of atomized car culture here in LA. Once you put art out there, people feel connected with the landscape in a different way.
All that coming up on The Frame. The rapper Nipsey Hussle was fatally shot Sunday outside the clothing store that he owned in South LA. The store was just one part of the large economic investment that he'd made in the neighborhood where he grew up. The 33-year-old artist was born Ermias Oskadam here in L.A., the son of immigrants from the West African country of Eritrea. He's been on the scene for more than a decade, making his reputation on homemade mixtapes. Just last year, he made his major label debut with the album Victory Lap, which earned him a Grammy nomination. Hussle has been open about having joined a set of the Crips when he was a teenager, but police have not yet offered a motive for his killing. I spoke today with journalist Jeff Weiss. He's been following Nipsey Hussle's career for years, and he wrote a tribute about the rapper for Complex magazine. He began with Hussle's philanthropic efforts.
Pretty much from the get-go, his initial desire was to give back and kind of rebuild a community. Obviously, he had, you know, grown up as a young child and seen the riots and seen the destruction that occurred. And, you know, once he had the ability to get rap money, there was a corner strip mall on Slauson and Crenshaw where he grew up, you know, hustling mixtapes and ended up going on to buy it. He only closed escrow 2 months ago. He was planning on redeveloping into a 100-unit apartment building, but he also was donating shoes to elementary schools. He owned a burger restaurant, a fish restaurant, just a really pillar of the community who was tirelessly dedicated to kind of improving it and the lives of those in it.
And he obviously took his music very seriously. He was almost a scholar of hip-hop. How was that reflected in the music that he wrote?
Well, I think first and foremost, Nipsey's a product of the Los Angeles gangster rap school. So, you know, he was well-versed in everything from one of the first L.A. gangster rap songs, Toddy T's Bataram.
Drug busters, you better beware and don't turn your head as if you don't care.
Because they got it.
It's obviously Ice Cube, N.W.A., Eazy-E, Tupac, of course. And he was really, you know, the next generation. And there was a window between when The Game first emerged and Kendrick Lamar and TDE first emerged. And Nipsey was really the bridge between those eras. And, you know, he was respected by everybody, not just for his craft, but for his, you know, his storytelling ability, his flow. He had a lot of Snoop Dogg in him. He really was kind of this combination of all these different great LA rappers kind of rolled into one.
There's a fascinating interview in 2013 with Nipsey at Complex. And Complex put him on its list of 10 underachieving rappers. And he came back and did an interview with Complex. I'm going to quote from it because I think it's really fascinating. He says, "I got enemies. I went to war for real in between albums. My life is real. So when I hear about an editor asking, what's up with my output, I'm like, what's up with you even commenting on my life?" A lot of these artists that you got on these lists, they're living real life and come from real places. The fact that they're not doing 25 to life in jail, you better salute that. How important was that whole idea to who he was?
Well, I think that's a tradition in rap that really extends to a lot of different regions. It is difficult to understand. I think a lot of critics don't necessarily come from those communities. And, you know, if you're not really reporting from it or, you know, you're not experiencing how the people in those communities feel about those artists, it kind of gets sometimes lost in translation. And Nipsey was really, that was a very, I think, valuable moment for music journalism in general, because I think a lot of people didn't necessarily understand that. And Nipsey kind of was such an eloquent critic and a cogent thinker that it really kind of brought those ideas to life.
He had a Grammy nomination this year for his 2018 album, Victory Lap. It was nominated for Best Rap Album. Where was he going musically?
When he first came out, he was raw. He had this energy, this swagger, this confidence. But as he became older and kind of matured as an artist, he really, he just kind of mastered all these different ideas. And his last album, Victory Lap, that was an album that he'd been promising that for nearly a decade. You know, he had everyone from YG and Kendrick Lamar, who were kind of the other heroes of the era, of gangster rap. He had Puff Daddy on it. He had The Dream. He really was able to bridge together all these different sounds and had such integrity. And, you know, the thing that makes, I think, hip-hop so special and Nipsey's music so special is there is that concept of real. There is that concept of authenticity. All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle, paid the price. With Victory Lap, he really embodied it, and he was, you know, you don't usually say that about a rapper in the early 30s, that they were improving and they're making the best music, but it was unquestionable that Nipsey was.
I think a number of people have a certain picture in their mind of what it means to be a gang member. Nipsey did not embrace that idea. In fact, he was working in an opposite direction at the time that he was killed.
He was always bridging gaps and working to find unity between types of people. And just because someone's a gang member doesn't mean that they're like this, you know, sociopathic murderer. I think that's the complete misconception that most people think about it. I think Nipsey was always somebody that was trying to, if you look at his music, I mean, he came out with a co-sign from The Game, who was a blood from Compton. You know, that was really unusual for somebody to be a rolling 60s Crip, especially at the time. And Nipsey really, if anything, from the onset to the end of his career, kind of symbolized that L.A. was moving beyond, you know, these simple binaries. And I think he did that with brilliance and fundamental decency. And the reality is that everyone I knew loved Nipsey. In the streets, the fans, all types of people, all types of ethnicities. Everyone in Los Angeles loved Nipsey. It's completely heartbreaking and tragic, and I think the entire city is mourning right now and will be for a very long time.
If people really want to honor Nipsey's life and his music, what would you recommend they do, not just in terms of listening to something, but maybe patronizing a business that was important to him or picking up a cause that meant something to him?
I think Nipsey would want people to support local, independent, Black-owned businesses in South Central and all over the city of Los Angeles. I think that he would want people to give back to their communities, to be in a protest against gentrification, to stop unfair housing practices, police harassment, police brutality. There's an old video that's circulating around.
I'd rather invest in some real estate, you know what I'm saying?
Something can you repeat that again, man? You're up and coming artist. What did you say you want to do?
I said invest in some real asset, take care of my people.
You know, he always wanted to invest in real estate because he understood that that was the only way that, you know, the people could control it.
Jeff Weiss is the editor of Passion of the Weiss and the Land. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Coming up on The Frame, there's a super bloom of art in the Palm Springs area. Stay tuned for my tour of Desert X. When you think about Palm Springs in the Coachella Valley, it's easy to picture golf courses, music festivals, and poolside vacations. A couple of weeks ago, I headed east on Interstate 10 to do none of those things. I went to Palm Springs for art. Now, that sounds like an active construction site, and it is. You put on hard hats to walk around, but it's also part of Desert X, a massive outdoor art event.
There's also these great industrial boom boxes. They look like construction equipment. This one seems to be playing the sound of a bulldozer, some sort of earth-moving equipment.
Visiting the construction site is kind of like walking through art in progress. It's a mid-century home being renovated, and each room has its own soundtrack.
My favorite, I think, is the bathroom. Let's go back in here, the shower stall.
Desert X includes 19 art installations stretching over a 50-mile expanse from Palm Springs all the way down to the Salton Sea. The installations include a massive video screen leading up to the Palm Springs tramway and a giant fuchsia structure in Palm Desert that looks like it's made from coral, as the Coachella Valley was once all underwater. Desert X is sprawling, it's complicated, it requires permits, city cooperation, a lot of moving pieces. Matthew Shum is one of the curators of Desert X.
Well, we started working on this in 2017. So this is something that involves a great deal of planning. I think that the desert presents very particular types of obstacles. When you're working in an institution, you have a lot of the terrain already well known to you. When you're working in the desert, of course, it's not merely ownership that becomes an issue. It's also the constructability of certain sites. So some of the sites that we were looking at, say around the Salton Sea, the ground turned out to be too soft. So we had to find another site.
Is it critical that it's fleeting, that it's not permanent, that it's there for a couple of months and then it's gone? And if so, why is that important?
This gets into what we call in contemporary art site specificity. So you're trying to take in some of the local conditions and respond to them. And those conditions are always changing. So to leave the work there is to create a monument. And we're not interested in monumentality. We're interested in responding to the work and creating a temporary community around that work that then has to go away.
Do you think Desert X in some ways can be a portal for people who might be afraid of museums or not comfortable with how they interpret or understand art to do it because there's no barrier to entry? There, you don't have to pay. You can walk up to the art. Does it lower the admission, in other words, to experiencing art for people who might be afraid of going into a fancy museum?
Absolutely. That with that inhibition barrier broken down and it not being an institution and not having some of the elitism that we associate with museums, it helps a lot. But I think that activating people the way that Desert X does, there's 55 miles between the first work and the work furthest to the east. I think that that is in itself activating people and giving them some more ownership over the experience than museums typically do.
And it's also a little bit like a scavenger hunt that you can follow a map, you can go on an app, you can say, I want to go to this part of the valley, I want to go to that part. You can stumble upon things. You don't have to have an agenda. You can just be curious and come up with a day plan as it happens.
Yeah, I think this actually points to something. There's sometimes a critique that can be made of Desert X that it's made for Instagram. But I think actually part of what you're describing is that people make this journey, they put the effort in to find the work, and then when they get there, there's this reward. So it's this way of taking control of that experience of finding the work that I think also leads to its proliferation on social media.
And I don't think Instagram in this case is bad. I think the fact that people especially are photographing themselves often in relationship to the installation, that they are participating in its exhibition is what's unusual. They're not taking a picture with no people in it. They're often taking pictures of themselves in the installation or adjacent to it, which you don't get in a museum.
Precisely. And I think once you put art into the landscape, what's fascinating is that it puts you into the landscape. I think you can go out to the desert and drive from Los Angeles, and you may bring with you some of that same energy that goes along with our kind of atomized car culture here in LA. Once you put art out there, people feel connected with the landscape in a different way. So that was one of the reasons to bring art to the Salton Sea. We want to bring people to this place. It's one of the most beautiful parts of the California desert, but we also want people to have a relationship with the Salton Sea, to move beyond the rumors about how it's unsafe to even be around it, and to make sure that they care about this place so that hopefully we can move down the road with policy solutions and other things. Art's not going to solve that problem, but it's going to bring people into contact with that community and with that place.
People are working in so many different mediums in Desert X. There is home construction. There are storefronts that have been modified. There are bus shelters. Is it important that the artists are working with all sorts of different types of things? It's not oil on a canvas, maybe in one or two instances it might be.
Well, this is part of the tradition of intervention that goes along with contemporary art. So you take everyday materials. In the case of Mary Kelly, it's a bus shelter. It's painted Lamborghini yellow, and it's been made into a kind of fallout shelter. This is a work that's actually making us connect the Cold War to the present day when it comes to the issue of militarism in the Southwest and California, the issue of nuclear weapons and nuclear disarmament. And so what I think she's doing is actually creating a kind of genealogy of this, a family tree of sorts, of this history that we inherited after the Second World War. So that's all there. If you pay attention to it, if you look at it closely, but it's also just a beautiful object. You take a bus shelter, you paint it Lamborghini yellow, and it changes your experience of waiting for the bus.
That Mary Kelly piece that curator Matthew Shum is talking about is called Peace is the Only Shelter. The solar-powered bus shelters include the so-called doomsday clock, which is marking how close we are to a man-made global catastrophe. Kelly has a long history of combining art and activism, and for this piece, her art blends so well into the city that you could almost miss it.
I consider it quite a coup to have had the bus company agree to do this and to let me put the fallout shelter sign on it and to remove all their signage. And I think one of the things that was most surprising to me is just interacting with people that came to the bus stops. And they'd say, this is my bus stop. The positioning of these things means that people own it in a very different way from seeing things in a museum. They really feel it's theirs and they have a right to it and to interact with it.
You are on Palm Canyon. I think two of the bus stops are on Palm Canyon. I think one is on Indian Canyon, but they're on very busy mm-hmm. routes within Palm Springs yes. where a lot of people are using them. And correct me if I'm mistaken, but I thought I saw a solar panel on top of one. Are they actually?
Yes, they're all they're powered by solar power.
So there's no carbon being used to power these.
And you can walk to them. And I have to say, as you know, my kind of formative moment is as a conceptual artist, and I'm very interested in structures that are serial. And for me, I could never do one. You have to have something that unfolds diegetically over time, you know, if you have the interest to walk through all three.
One of the things that I thought about in your installation and others is this whole idea about the beauty of art and the way they can address difficult subjects. Because your bus shelters are, I think, arguably very beautiful. They're this beautiful yellow color. They're gorgeously designed and beautifully decorated. And yet they're talking about very serious issues about mm-hmm. nuclear proliferation, about nuclear waste, about atomic testing. How do you see those two things going hand in hand? And a lot of these other installations are incredibly beautiful, but are talking about difficult issues. It could be immigration. Mm-hmm. It could be violence against women. They are dealing with some deep subjects.
Well, it depends how philosophically you want to consider the question of beauty. If you took it very simply as being about framing, which is actually the name of your program, isn't it? So anything that you can't get a hold of in a frame, as it were, becomes the ugly, philosophically speaking. So there's no way that you can even focus people on an idea without a frame. And the frame is the beginning of making something, which you can contain, which you can look at, which holds your fascination long enough to. And that can take many, many different forms, but it is a limit that's put on it. And I think that what you've described is precisely why you would enjoy it, if you're going to think about it as perhaps Kant described the beautiful. It's not just something that's simply nice to look at. It's difficult. And he says, because it's difficult, you have to try to get your mind around it, and that's what becomes beautiful, when you can do both.
Mary Kelly is one of the artists whose work is part of the massive outdoor art event known as Desert X. Desert X is open through April 21st. Coming up on The Frame, we wrap up my tour of Palm Springs and the Coachella Valley with a tour of a new museum show from Western artists. I'm John Horn. Welcome back to The Frame and our survey of the art scene in the Coachella Valley. One of my stops was the Palm Springs Art Museum. It's hosting the traveling exhibition called Unsettled, and it's work from Western artists from Alaska all the way down to Bolivia, and it features many who are working in multiple disciplines, from video to sculpture. I did a walking tour of Unsettled with Mark Pryor. He heads the Palm Springs Art Museum, and he explained the origins of the exhibition.
Well, it originated at the Nevada Museum of Art out of Reno. What their idea of it was is that it was a survey of Western artists and their response to the West, from Alaska at the north all the way down to Bolivia in the south.
How much of the exhibition is sculpture? How much of it is photography? How much of it is painting? It seems like it's a pretty diverse mix.
Well, there's a real mix. So you'll see as we move through the various things that we have. These are two photographs here by Nicholas Glennon, who is, I think, one of the most assertive artists that we have in the show. And here he's taken a picture of a sign that said originally Indian River, and somebody has painted over it Indian Land, and then again something No Name Creek, and then it has the Indian name underneath it. Just really, I think, meaningful and powerful work in a very quiet sort of way.
I've been spending a lot of time over this weekend looking at Desert X installations, and then being inside the museum, it really makes me incredibly excited about all of the art that's happening in the Coachella Valley and in and around Palm Springs. Is this one of those weeks or months where you get really excited about what the area has to offer? You have this new show, you have Desert X, and I'm sure there's lots of other things I don't know about going on.
You know, Palm Springs used to be a place that was a very sleepy retirement community, and in the last 5 years or so, that has changed immensely, and we're responding to that. You know, we're reacting in a much different way than we used to, and slowly evolving along with that demographic change as well.
This clearly looks like the painting of some sort of border wall. Do I have part of that right?
It is, and I would imagine it's from the Mexican side and not from the U.S. side. The name of the artist is Ana Teresa Fernandez, and she does site-specific pieces like this a lot. And you'll see she's done most of the painting while she's in her tango outfit and her heels, and she's climbing up on the ladder in order to paint this blue so that the wall actually fades away against the background. I think this is an amazing piece. And then over here to the left, you'll see that she's actually painted a picture of herself doing her job on the video.
So these are amazing. These are leaf blowers that have been tricked out. Tell us a little bit about this artist and about these, I guess, two pieces, two leaf blowers and a power tools banner.
Well, this is Ruben Ortiz Torres. And he often does things in response to the immigrant situation, immigrant workers in this country, and you know, particularly in California. And so you'll see one of them in particular is absolutely tricked out. You know, it's done in brass or bronze or gold, and it's almost mythologized in a way to highlight, you know, commercialism and how immigrant workers really use these tools as, you know, part of their everyday existence.
The other thing that struck me about what's happening around town, especially with Desert X, is how accessible a lot of those installations are to the general public. This is such a diverse community. What is the museum doing to bring in new audiences, especially when you have a show that's so relevant to so many different strata of people who live and work around the area?
Yeah, you know, when you have such a local population that lives here, you know, we have a large Latino population that lives here, for instance. And so one of the things that I'm extremely intent on is throwing open our doors and making sure that we invite the community in and show them themselves in a way that maybe they haven't thought about before. You know, we want to kind of mirror their lives and make them think about how they think about themselves, how everybody thinks about them, and how we can integrate them more with an experience of art. You know, it's one of the great things about the museum is being able to come in as a contemplative space and really look at things in a way that makes you think, oh, I never really saw it like that before.
I'm going to take a look at this piece straight in front of us. I recognize it from a very good distance as a Mark Bradford piece. Mark Bradford is a very important artist who is working on the outskirts of downtown LA. And this is a piece that the museum owns, is that right?
Yeah, we do. We acquired this some time ago, lucky for us. And Mark Bradford's popularity has soared, and he's just a wonderful artist. We're so happy to have this piece and very proud of it, too. As you can see, it takes kind of center stage here.
Okay, this is, it says, the surfaces of Ed Ruscha's chocolate room are extremely fragile. We know it is tempting, but please do not touch, and I suspect do not lick. Tell me about this this room. Let's walk into it, too. This is radio. It smells amazing in here.
It does, and when we first put it up, it smelled really strongly of chocolate. So you see dozens and dozens of panels around this room that are all made of Hershey bars, melted Hershey bars, on paper. And so Ed Ruscha actually did this on site and melted the chocolate and put them on paper, and then, you know, here they are.
What is it like watching people walk around in this room?
Well, we just watch to make sure that they're not biting it.
Let me ask you this last question. When people who live in the area look at some of the art here, and a lot of it is kind of about the area, do you hope that people start looking at the natural world around them in a different way? I mean, can this open people's eyes to what they have taken for granted for so long that's just in their own backyard?
Yeah, I would really hope so. And that's the experience of art. It should open your eyes and cause you to think about things a little bit differently than you have. Again, it's the wonderful experience of being able to walk into a museum and see something that opens your eyes or startles you.
Mark, thanks for coming on the show.
You're very welcome.
Unsettled is at the Palm Springs Art Museum until April 30th. That's our show for today. I'm John Horn. We'll see you back here tomorrow.